All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense for this Thursday, February 2nd, Groundhog Day. It's another beautiful day on Lake Wissota. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense for this Thursday, February 2nd, Groundhog Day. Obligatory Groundhog Day joke has been made. It's out of the way, Aaron. I promise I won't do that anymore.
Okay, sounds good.
Coming up this morning, it is February. We're well past New Year's Day. We're well into 2023, and yet the year is still missing a few important elements. Like, what specifically do Republicans in Congress want to cut as part of a debt ceiling deal? And what do Republicans in the legislature want to cut as a way to pay for their flat tax plan that benefits the very wealthy? If you're going to make demands for cuts in the federal and the state budgets, shouldn't you have a plan? We're going to talk to Democratic analyst Joe Zepecki this hour about those stories, plus the state Supreme Court race. Also, you can kill the COVID emergency, but COVID can still kill you. President Biden is talking about winding down the federal government's COVID-19 emergency programs. Republicans want an instant and chaotic cut to the programs, but what does it really mean to lift the emergency assistance to people when COVID is still killing hundreds of Americans every day? This week's Hometown Health segment comes up at 7:30, and Dr. Ben Weston joins us along with Dr. Kristen Lyerly to talk about those COVID topics as well as new FDA vaccination guidelines. Again, that's Hometown Health in our next hour, plus Luke Mathers, and big news about Charlie Behrens, for cripe's sake. And to call into the show, 844-967-2789, or email us, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And you have already heard the voice of Aaron Zommers back at the flagship, the mothership, if you will. And now my obligatory reminder before we get to the Charlie Behrens news, that the February 21st primary is rapidly approaching. I shouldn't say rapidly. It approaches 24 hours a day, you know, no matter what, but it is sneaking up on. No, it doesn't sneak up. It's still 24 hours a day. Anyway, you can request your absentee ballot right now. If you haven't already, go to myvote.wi.gov, or at least make a plan to go vote on February 21st for a very important state Supreme Court race. So the note about Charlie Behrens is a really nice surprise for those of us around Civic Media who are just pleased as punch to tell you that Charlie Behrens, the creator of the Manitowoc Minute, is bringing his podcast to the Civic Media radio network called the Cripes Cast podcast, for cripe's sake, don't you know? It'll air as a weekly radio program on the weekends at noon. For the few of you that aren't familiar with Charlie Behrens, in addition to his stand-up comedy, he is a New York Times bestselling author. He is an Emmy Award-winning journalist. He's a musician. He's been featured on Comedy Central, Funny or Die, TBS, etc. He has a weekly podcast, as we mentioned, and he regularly posts content, videos across all social media platforms, and has amassed more than 7 million followers. And the Cripes Cast will feature Charlie interviewing guests with Midwest connections on a variety of topics. And again, you'll be able to hear that at noon on Saturdays and Sundays, all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network, which is just a really nice thing to have. You know, weekend radio, people are always looking for something fresh, and we're just really happy to be able to pass that along to you. When we get the show rolling here in our next segment, we're going to focus on what, if anything, we can point to early in this year for Republican action on the things that, you know, that you care about. This has been a busy time for Republicans to lay out their vision, their priorities, their plans. So what have they been? Well, in Tennessee, that includes a bill with a 6-year prison term for performing in multiple drag shows. In Florida, they're making progress in banning the ability to teach freely about Black history. Happy Black History Month. They're also banning books. In Arkansas, they're banning words. In Missouri, they're banning women in the legislature from having bare shoulders. And in Wisconsin, they blocked a ban on child torture known as conversion therapy. In fact, across the 50 states, more than 200 anti-LGBTQ bills have been introduced. And as mentioned, the debt ceiling debate threatens to wreck the economic recovery, but Republicans won't say what they would cut. What is missing from all of this? Basically, anything about your economic situation, the thing that they said over and over again would be their focus. Apparently, it was never going to be. But some of us tried to mention that a time or two heading into the 2022 election. All right, let's take a look at sports here for this Thursday morning. He said, looking for his sports scores. Here we go. Marquette is what I was going to start with. And I realized I didn't update the Marquette score. So let me go looking for that really quick here for you. There we go. I went to bed at kind of an early alarm, and Marquette was leading Villanova late in the game, and 14th-ranked Marquette beat Villanova 73-64 to give Marquette their fourth straight victory. The Bucks play the LA Clippers tonight. Then on Saturday, they play at home against Miami. The Badger men's basketball team is at Ohio State tonight, and near as I can tell, as of this hour, Tom Brady is still retired. More coming up in just a bit. This is Up North News Radio for a Thursday. Today. I don't care what you say anymore. This is my life. Are you listening, GOP? Go ahead with your own life. Leave me alone. Details on that coming up in just a bit. Tomorrow's program will have Kia Vakil, Carolyn Fiddler, Mark Jacob, Dan Schumacher. The whole usual Friday lineup should be with us. You know, just one more note in sports, and you know, we have a lot of fun with Tom Brady as in making fun of him, but you have to give the guy his due for his record. I mean, he's 45 years old. He owns every meaningful NFL passing record over a 23-year career for a quarterback. Folks loved the irony that the retirement came one day after he attended the premiere of the movie 80 for Brady. I'm sure you've seen the commercials for that, talking about how Lily Tomlin, Jane Fonda, Rita Moreno, and Sally Field play four lifelong friends who went to a Super Bowl to see Brady play. And so Brady was asked about working with these women between the ages of 76 and 91 who don't want to retire. And he tips his cap to them for, you know, doing what they want to continue doing. But in the NFL, you can only do that for so long. But again, 23 years? I mean, come on. The thing that you have to remember most is that he was not picked to be one of the greatest NFL players ever when he came out of college. He wasn't drafted number one or two. He wasn't drafted in the first round or the second round. He was the 199th pick in the 2000 NFL draft. The New England Patriots took him at 199, only after six other quarterbacks, three kickers, and a punter were among those who had been picked up before him in the draft. So, again, happy trails and, you know, quite a career, and can't say we'll miss you seeing you on the field. How he'll do in the broadcast booth is another matter. You know, some folks surprise you with how well they do, and others just perpetuate the dumb jock stereotype. So we will see what Mr. Brady does as he tries to get his domestic life back in order and his professional life off in a new direction. This is normally the part of the morning where I tell you what is posted at upnorthnewswi.com. And I don't want to say too much about the story that Kia Vakil has just posted up because we're going to talk to him tomorrow morning, but I don't know that it's wrong to talk about this 2 days in a row. This bill that I'm about to tell you about, the headline is Republicans want to create a government-run anti-abortion website and collect pregnant women's personal information. It would provide misleading information, direct women to healthcare, quote unquote, centers that pressure them to not have abortions, and collect information that could end up being shared with anti-abortion groups. Senator Marco Rubio is one of the bill sponsors. Congresswoman Nancy Mace of South Carolina, who folks thought was one of the more moderate members. If this bill were to become law, of course it won't this session, but just even introducing this bill tells you something. But if this bill were to pass, a website would be created called life.gov. And it would contain information and some resources related to pregnancy and adoption by zip code. There would be information on alternatives to abortion. There would be information about abortion risks, the bill says, even though the risks are exceedingly low. It would ban any information on entities that perform or refer or counsel on abortion care, directing women to crisis pregnancy centers, which often themselves don't come nearly close enough to offering the full range of reproductive health care needs of women. And as a result, some women who go to crisis pregnancy centers and who then have very complicated pregnancies, begin to get sick near death, have to find another place to get care rather quickly. This is the world we live in, post-Roe, and Kia Vakil will talk more about that and more of the week's headlines from a national standpoint coming up at 6:30 tomorrow morning. At 6:30 this morning, we'll be talking to Joe Zepecki about more of the state headlines in the news over the course of the week here. But as I was looking through what all has been taking place around the country, and I gave kind of the headline version before the break here, one that really caught my eye was a Washington Post article that is more or less about what all has happened in Arkansas since Sarah Huckabee Sanders became governor. And again, I'm having a tough time actually saying those words all together, but if you can believe Donald Trump can be elected president, sure, why can't Sarah Huckabee Sanders be elected governor of Arkansas? So barely a month into office, the things that she's done include an executive order that prohibits critical race theory in Arkansas schools, even though critical race theory is not taught in Arkansas schools. Another bans the word Latinx in official documents. There's a bill that would impose restrictions on drag shows. And, you know, state legislators said that Sanders feels empowered because she did get 63% of the vote in Arkansas, and so feels empowered to take a side in the culture wars. And we talked about all of the many bills that have been introduced, ostensibly about protecting kids, when it has nothing to do with that at all. And I really appreciate how in places like Arkansas, Tennessee, and others where these bills come up and they talk about, you know, banning entertainment with people in flamboyant costumes, and yet nobody's going after wrestling, which is far, far more violent, far more harmful to our kids than anything that they might, you know, see or hear about at a drag show about, you know, openness, inclusivity, being welcoming to others. But this is what we're getting out of Arkansas, out of Tennessee. And then it is so much worse in Florida, where Governor Ron DeSantis is, why nobody else yet is putting the white supremacist label on him. I don't like to think of myself as that much of a pioneer, but I'm feeling pretty good about how the history books are going to remember somebody who is quite literally working to erase Black history and create an unrelenting assault on freedom of expression by going after curriculum plans, by going after books at all levels of school libraries, of treating basically all books as guilty until proven innocent. And what this all is some variation of what in Florida they call the Stop Woke Law. And again, the word woke, which, as you know, if you listen to the show regularly, is, in my definition, woke is shorthand for don't be a bigoted ass, you know. But for them, woke is this way to sum up white grievances in such a way to whip you up into such a frenzy that you forget that your pocket is being picked at the same time. And you're not you, but too many people are not following that between tax policy, other economic policies, the way they ran up the deficit, you know, like crazy, you know, that there is not an economic plan for the middle class. And instead, take that economic anxiety, mix it with racial grievance, and suddenly you have a whole new target to go after. You can go after same-sex marriage. You can go after women's healthcare rights. You can go after teachers, as has been done in Wisconsin since Scott Walker became governor. All of these things to defer and deflect and divide and distract. And it continues unabated in places like Florida. And while Wisconsin doesn't get nearly the headlines, there's not nearly the outlandish behavior and proposals yet, in part because Wisconsinites elected Tony Evers by a comfortable margin, much more so than, you know, his narrow victory 4 years ago. But although the wilder proposals aren't getting as much attention in Wisconsin yet, Republicans in the legislature still know how to use the levers of power and use things like a very obscure committee that looks over administrative rules and use that committee in a way that most recently blocks a ban on conversion therapy, which is nothing more than child torture, that when somebody is having questions about their gender identity and folks try to provide the counseling and affirmation that will help them learn more about themselves, instead blocking that and trying to un-gay people is, you know, for lack of a better term. It is reminiscent of the Americanization that was done on generations of indigenous children in the country. Again, because there is one group, a group of white people, because again, I'm going to hasten to add, not all white people, but there is this very ugly group of white people that says, well, we want everybody's lives to be like ours. At the very opening of the Washington Post article about Arkansas, Sarah Huckabee Sanders is quoted telling a crowd outside a Dairy Queen in Little Rock that if she's elected, she wanted, quote, to make sure that the state my kids are growing up in and the state every kid is growing up in is the same one I got to grow up in. And then the question becomes, how do you mean that, Governor Huckabee Sanders? How do you mean that you want to make sure kids grow up in the same one you got to grow up in? Do you mistakenly believe that the state that you grew up in had equal opportunities for everybody? Have you romanticized the history of the state that you grew up in? And so you feel like if we just stop talking about divisions, if we stop talking about institutional racism, that that is somehow a helpful thing and that children of color will automatically assume all of the rights, freedoms, and opportunities that you had? Is that what you mean by you want every kid to grow up in the same state that you grew up in? Or is it something a bit more nefarious? Do you want kids to grow up in the state that you grew up in that had a very recent history of aiming fire hoses at protesters for civil rights and police dogs and police with clubs and poll taxes and everything else to keep people in their place that don't look like you. Is that what you mean by you want the kids of today in Arkansas to grow up in the same one that you grew up in? Because it's not really clear either way, whichever way you're interpreting it, is not a way that's advantageous or helpful or free for many children in this country who deserve much, much better. We'll have Joe Zepecki coming up after the break. You're up north. Well, I don't know how many of you folks are familiar with the name Wally Pipp. If you've heard of Lou Gehrig, then you'll know that Wally Pipp was the regular player for the Yankees and took a day off, and Lou Gehrig filled in, and the rest is history. And Lou Gehrig is back with us now, but Wally Pipp is back with us now. I'm going to tell you, that was Lou Gehrig I was talking to last week in Melissa Baldoff.
She's the greatest.
Uh-huh. And you're almost legally required to say that, but I think you believe it anyway.
I would say it anyways.
How were your travels? Everything good?
Good. Great time out in our nation's capital. Always nice to kind of wander around the citadel of democracy and take in new monuments. I stopped by the Dwight Eisenhower Memorial, which I had not seen before. That's an interesting one, a little bit off the mall. A nice trip to our nation's capital.
Very good. Well, good. Glad to have you back here, getting back into the week that was in state politics. There wasn't a lot of action, so we'll just talk about some of the rhetoric that went back and forth. The week started with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss saying on one of the weekend talk shows, in so many words, that the Republican flat tax plan, you know, isn't a deal breaker. And I think we all knew that. I think we all knew that was kind of their opening thing of, you know, if we could get this past Evers, we would do it. But it still kind of has that, you know, Voss blinked look to it when Evers said, yeah, he's more than prepared to veto an entire state budget if that's what you have to do to stop this tax. So again, early in the process, but point to Evers?
Yeah, I mean, let's certainly hope so on behalf of Wisconsin taxpayers. Hopefully everybody saw the chart. If not, I'm sure that Up North News has it on social, and if not, we'll get it to them, that shows the distribution of impact if the Republican flat tax plan goes into effect. And guess what, folks? If you make $40,000 or $50,000 or $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year, you're not seeing any benefit whatsoever. All of the impact of going to a flat tax goes to those making more than $100,000 a year. Good for those folks, by the way. But we cannot move to a more regressive tax structure and hope that that is what is going to address this state's long-term structural challenges. And I know Pat knows what I mean by that, but for any listeners who don't, we face a real demographic crisis in this state. We are getting older. We are aging. Our birth rate is not what you would like to see for a vibrant economy. There's only one region of the state that is really growing, and that's the Madison region. We've got demographic challenges. And so in order to put those off, we have to attract families who want to move here. We have to attract businesses who want to establish operations here. And the policy choices that are made in Madison impact those decisions. Another state not too far away from us, Iowa, dealing with a very similar set of structural challenges, has gone to a flat tax. Guess what? It didn't do a dang thing to address the issue of attracting employers, attracting, you know, young families who want to live, work, play, and stay to raise that family for generations. We've got big challenges in this state crying out for solutions. A flat tax is not one of them.
And meanwhile, on the federal side, of course, they're talking, you know, about their own 30% national sales tax, the debt crisis. The interesting thing, Joe, is that in preparation for, you know, my Thursday and Friday interviews with you from a state political standpoint and with Kia Vakil from a national political standpoint, I start with one piece of paper and then two columns. And in both cases, one of the things at the top of the column is you know, that Republicans have these, shall we say, unusual ideas for the budget, but in both cases will not tell you what they want to cut. What in other words, what exactly is their plan? And that can be said at all levels right now with Republican politicians.
Yeah, they don't have a plan. That is the plan. You know, it's like, I feel like this is a scene from a, you know, a comedy movie, like step one, make a plan. Step two, do that plan. Yes. Well, come on, folks. Like, and part of what's happening as a result, I believe, long term, is that Republicans are losing what they had enjoyed for a long time, which was a political advantage on taxes. It is increasingly clear to growing number of Wisconsinites, when it comes to tax policy, you cannot trust Republicans. When it comes to fiscal policy, you cannot trust Republicans, because when they're in control, spending goes up, right? And the only time they get religion on what they refer to as fiscal conservatism is when they're out of power. That's what you see in Washington. And you just can't trust a party whose big policy idea for fighting inflation is to make a family's $100 grocery tab every week cost $130. That's what Republicans want to do right now. That's their tax plan, to the extent they have one. It's either jack up the sales tax or flatten the tax rate so all the benefits go to those at the top. Why would you trust a political party like that with tax policy?
Without the specificity, and I mentioned this one before, but I'll read off this tweet from Jake Edwards, quoting Republican State Senate Leader Devin Lemahue, who said, Governor Evers should give a vision on what he wants to meet the state challenges, and instead he's just talking about spending money. And Jake responds, that's how we meet the challenges. You think they get solved by magic? And Governor Evers has put out plans. He has attached dollar numbers to it. He'll do it again in the budget address on the 15th. You have to have a plan.
Yeah. And listen, when there's $7 billion in cash sitting in a state surplus, I agree. And Tony Evers agrees. You should give some of that money back to the taxpayers, but it should go to working and middle-class families. We have done enough to cut taxes time after time for those making $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 or more a year. The tax system works just fine for those folks. The people who it's not working for are those families who are working so hard to do everything right and play by the rules so they can retire with dignity, maybe help their kids with the purchase of a home or you know, a semester or two of higher education. That's the American dream. That's the Wisconsin dream. And it's too far out of reach for way too many families. The Tony Evers plan won't solve that overnight. No government plan will, but it's going to try to make it just a little bit easier for those folks. That's good public policy, in my view.
One more thing on the state budget, and then we'll head over to the state Supreme Court race. But you had Rob Coles, Republican state senator from Green Bay, now that PFAS have been discovered in Green Bay, saying that he thinks Republicans are willing to now spend more money and be less obstructionist about PFAS relief. Obviously, the correct answer is we'll see. You know, devil's in the details on the budget. But dare I say it, I would actually put the needle on the positive side of 50-50, that Republicans actually will be less WMC-like, shall we say, on the subject of PFAS when this is all said and done. Again, that could be weird optimism on my part, but I'm just being honest. I think Rob Coles might actually drag the rest of the party with him.
We got to have optimism, Pat. Without it, we're lost. Listen, I think it's an old Joe Biden maxim of politics to, you know, you can question your opponent's choices and policies and plans, but never question their motivations. And I think we should take a page out of the Joe Biden playbook. And it does not matter what Coles's motivations are here. It does not matter why he got there. It matters that he got to the right place, which is that local communities in all corners of Wisconsin are being impacted by PFAS contamination. This is a growing, real issue, and the state should not ultimately be on the hook for all of it. The polluters should be held accountable as well. But that process takes time, and we need to remediate these contaminated wells and watersheds and make sure that the water that comes out of the tap is clean for kids and families. This seems like a very positive step in the right direction, and put me down as I don't care what the motivation is. Let's just get it done.
All right, let's do the state Supreme Court race. I have two observations on the week. I'd like to know yours as well. Mine are in no particular order here. Judge Jennifer Doro of Waukesha County ran her first radio ads. And to no one's surprise, it completely starts by capitalizing on the Waukesha parade tragedy. I think there's a way that you reference it and people go, oh, yeah, she was the judge there, as opposed to, hey, did you know there was this hurt, you know, big tragedy and she was the judge? It just was over the top in my view, but maybe not everybody agrees with that. Then the other was the other conservative candidate, former Justice Dan Kelly, when asked on one of the shows last weekend about, you know, money from Dick Eline and other big money coming into the race, he basically threw up his hands and said, you know, we're helpless. We can't deal with that sort of thing when he's running for a position on the very body that could decide these things. So I don't know if you want to tackle one or the other of those, or if you had other observations on the week.
Well, I think the big thing that stands out to me is what happened at Tuesday night's forum with just the conservative candidates. So just Judge Doro and former Justice Kelly. And what I take away from that is the Republican Party, the conservative wing of Wisconsin, still a house divided. Those two candidates, by all outward appearances, are really in a battle, you know, neck and neck, toe to toe. And without public polling, or really private polling that means anything because you haven't seen a bunch of money spent on mass communication yet, what you have to do to figure out is this thing close or not is really read the body language. And when I read the body language and I listen to former Justice Kelly saying he will not endorse Judge Doro if she emerges from the primary, when I hear Judge Doro go after former Justice Kelly for his supporters' attacks on her, I see what is shaping up to be a real fight for the number two spot after Judge Janet. And, you know, listen, Judge Mitchell's working hard. He's out there. But the reality of his situation in terms of how many dollars he's raised, he's not on TV. He's not mass communicating with the voters in the way that Judge Janet is. I'm seeing her ads here in Milwaukee. I'm sure folks in Madison are. That's tough to reckon with when you don't have the resources to be on TV and on mass media yourself. So what I'm seeing is Republicans divided and Democrats kind of coalescing around Judge Janet, and you're not seeing some of the nasty grams on the more progressive side like you are on the right.
So when we talk about who emerges from the primary, the top two of those candidates, and as we've said, it could be the two conservatives, it could be the two progressives, or one of each. And my thinking has been that if, you know, it's conservatives, if they show up in much higher numbers, the two conservatives are going to go through versus the two progressives, as more progressives show up. What I'm hearing from you is the opposite school of thought, that because Judge Janet Protasiewicz of Milwaukee and perhaps Judge Jennifer Doro on the conservative side, if they are the more popular ones, they will emerge rather than any two from the left or the right.
Yeah, I think the closest we ever came to a political environment where you could count on getting two judicial candidates of the same philosophy through was in, I want to say it was 2017. Is that when Tim Burns ran?
Oh, no. I'd have to think back.
It was sort of the dawn of the Trump age. Mm-hmm. And we knew that progressives were absolutely fired up and ready to go and would walk across hot coals to go and vote in any way to send a signal that they were against Trumpism and what was happening. So you had a couple of progressive candidates in that race. You had a couple of conservative candidates. And there was if progressive turnout is really through the roof, maybe both progressive candidates can get through the February primary. It didn't happen. And so if even in that sort of ideal political environment, it can't happen, I think the operating assumption here has to be that you're going to probably get one more progressive candidate, one more conservative candidate. And, you know, that, listen, that doesn't happen on its own. People got to go out and vote. But this is a race where you only get to vote for one. We don't have ranked choice voting. That's another way you could see something like that. But without ranked choice voting, one pick per voter, I think what we're likely to see is Judge Janet from the progressive side and whoever emerges from what's shaping up to be a pretty nasty fight on the Republican side between Kelly and Doro.
I hope you are all paying attention to understand why Joe Zepecki is doing what he's doing, is the consummate insider expert, and why the other one of us just yaps on the radio all day long. Joe Zepecki, appreciate the insight as always. Good to see you again. Have a great weekend.
Talk to you next week.
All right. Obviously, quick disclaimer here. Joe Zepecki appears to favor Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz. I will note that other progressives favor Dane County Judge Everett Mitchell. Plenty of progressives will vote for both of them in the February 21st primary, because if enough conservatives show up on February 21st, the two conservative candidates advance to April, and then there's no chance the state Supreme Court will have a progressive majority, which would allow the state to get rid of the corrupt maps and the 1849 abortion ban. More after this. You're up north. Yeah, there it is. The Sonny and Cher of your morning radio here. Pat Kreitlow here, Kristen Lyerly over there. And if I know yesterday we just talked about Bill Murray, we get to talk about Bill Murray again. It's like it's Groundhog Day, because this, of course, was the tune from it, which was released on this day in 1993. And this is still one of those movies I'll watch every time that it comes on. If I'm flipping channels, I'll sit down and watch that one for a while. It's a favorite. Good morning, Dr. Lyerly. What about you?
Good morning, Mr. Kreitlow. It's an adorable movie. It's sweet and fun, and Bill Murray is just wacky, and it makes you feel good.
It is. It's a nice feel-good movie here. And it is also on this day in 1887. The first Groundhog Day was observed in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. Count me among those who, this is all I'm going to say about Groundhog Day all day. It's like, you know, I make fun of meteorologists all the time. I'm still going to trust them more than a rodent.
So many different ways to take that. But, you know, here's the fun thing about Groundhog Day. We're always thinking about spring, those of us who live in these dark, cold places. So it's maybe just a little way to start, you know, to instill a little hope in the winter.
Whatever it takes, whatever it takes for hope, I will take it. Speaking of which, it's also this time of year we start thinking about spring training and baseball. So I have a couple of, coincidentally, a couple of baseball notes here. The National League was formed on this day in 1876. The American League was formed on this day in 1900. And get this, the original teams were Boston, Detroit, Milwaukee, Baltimore, Chicago, St. Louis. However, that original Milwaukee team later became the St. Louis Browns and then the Baltimore Orioles that we know today. So the original Milwaukee team is in Baltimore. There was an original team in Baltimore. It folded after a year. It was replaced by a New York team, first called the Highlanders and later the Yankees.
Huh.
So there's your baseball trivia for the day.
That's amazing.
I know.
I had no idea.
Try that on your boys. See if that gets anything other than a rolling of the eyes. Birthday time, 81 years old today for Graham Nash.
I'll light the fire. You place the flowers in the vase that you bought today.
Which is obviously a bit more melancholy now with the passing of David Crosby. But again, it's what his passing did as well was remind us that it wasn't just David Crosby, that Stephen Stills and Graham Nash were so valuable to this group. Everybody contributed something. And so we wish Graham Nash a happy 81st birthday. Mm-hmm. 74 years old today is Ross Valerie, the bassist for Journey and the Steve Miller Band. I think it's, if it's Valerie, I apologize. I don't know that I've ever been familiar with his work as an individual. I just know Journey and I know the Steve Miller Band and I know their bassist is 74 years old today. let's see. This would be the 70th birthday for Dog the Bounty Hunter, Dwayne Chapman. Never watched it. How about you?
Nope. No. Not my jam.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Aaron, would I know the theme song if you played it? The answer is no. No, I would not.
It's
file
Ozzy
that
Osbourne.
In the black flag category.
Yeah, yeah. It's Ozzy Osbourne for some reason. They got him to do the theme song for this show.
They got Ozzy to do the theme, you say? All right. Maybe a bit more musically relevant to my generation, NBC premiered The Midnight Special on this day in 1973. It ran on Friday nights after Johnny Carson until 1981. That was a little past my bedtime, but I'd catch it now and then. Kristen, was that still relevant TV when you were growing up?
Wow, that really rings a bell, but I don't know. It seems like something my mom probably wouldn't let me watch.
Probably. After what you might have seen is after it was off the air for a couple of years, the replacement show put in there was Friday Night Videos.
Oh yeah, that
oh,
was
oh,
definitely.
Oh, that got her. That got her. Yep. Okay.
Yes, that I love
was
that
when
one.
You had the sleepovers and you guys would dance to, you know, Come on Eileen or, you know, Our House or things like that. All the big video artists of the time.
Mm-hmm. Before MTV. That
yes.
was what we had.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Let's see. How old were you know Shakira? How old, not personally, but I mean, you know of her.
Well, I mean.
And we're hearing, you know, her hips don't lie in the background here as we say happy birthday to her. How old would you say Shakira is?
Oh, she's got to be 36.
46.
Are you kidding me?
No, 46. Whoa.
Did you see her Super Bowl halftime with Jennifer Lopez?
I did, and she was amazing. Mm-hmm. She's I mean, and people knew that. They knew at the age of 13 she signed a record deal with Sony. So she has been on that path to stardom. You know, I don't know all of her work, but every time I see her, she strikes me. The people that always strike me are the ones that look like they're just working. I mean, they're just showmen and women. They know how to pour themselves into a performance, and she is most certainly one of those.
Mm-hmm.
1985, Foreigner had a number one hit. This was once a gentle love song. Now, when people are drunk, they blast it out as a karaoke song.
There was like... There's a lot of controversy in the band over that song, too, because it seems to me that Foreigner wanted to be like a hard rock band. And yes. then they started doing all these ballads and the band was like, we're not a ballad band. We're a rock band.
But everyone loved them.
Every rock band has faced that fork in the road where they go, wait, we're a rock band. And then somebody explains to them, here's the money you made as a rock band. Here's the pile of money you're going to make with power ballads and love songs. And suddenly Foreigner is doing... love ballads. Mm-hmm. Well, good for them, I guess. On this day in 1976, Lynyrd Skynyrd's fourth studio album, Give Me Back My Bullets, is released. And on this day in 2019, Marshmello performed the first large-scale concert to be integrated into a video game using a motion control rig to control his character in Fortnite in front of 10 million fans.
Whoa.
I am 58 years old. I would like to think I am a savvy person relatively, and I think I only understood about half of what that sentence just said that I read.
All I know is that when it first got announced, my friends and I made fun of it so hard, and then we started seeing some videos, and we're like, yeah, we made the right choice to make fun of this. This is ridiculous.
You know, I don't know, because I went to Lollapalooza one year with my son, and as we were waiting for the band to come on, whoever ninja was playing Fortnite and they were broadcasting it on the big video screens and the crowd was cheering. They were super into it. I had no clue what was going on, but the crowd ate it up with the spoon.
That is clearly the divide, is the people who will be spectators for what's called esports, mm-hmm. which to me was called, you don't know how to play the game, so you're watching somebody else play it. But that's, you know, again, that's a generational divide. Kristen's hanging around because Hometown Health comes up at the bottom of the next hour. So if you don't mind, you know, just hanging out and goofing around till then, that would be awfully nice of you.
Joystick and a button, I'm good to go.
On that note, we'll take a break. This is Up North News Radio.